These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a five-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
We are live, moments removed from WWE Backlash from St. Louis. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting to go through tonight's WWE offering. How are you, Wei?
Doing all right. Yeah, not so bad, man.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear.
Why the pause?
I'm just trying to take in your sincerity level. You seem chipper.
I just had a big coffee at like 9 p.m. So I'm going to be pretty
regular
chipper.
Coffee or
oh yeah yeah
oh
I'm,
man
I'm going to be pretty chipper for the next 7 hours. I'm sure.
Will you be awake for the next 7 hours?
Yes, I will be, yeah. Doing the night shift tonight.
Oh, boy. Well, this gets you off to a roaring start. There was a roaring crowd tonight in St. Louis that we will be getting into. A very busy night across combat sports, but specifically within professional wrestling. We do want to alert people that up now on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson have a 90-minute rundown of Friday night's New Japan Resurgence card from Ontario, California that you can listen to now. As well, we will have a report up on the site. Jack Wanon is at the Mattamy Athletic Center as we speak. He will be filing a report later on the ongoing Northern Rising card that Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling is putting on, and he will also have a story on the UFC 315 card with the main card about to kick off right now. Going head-to-head with us, but you know what? Montreal doesn't have anything on John Pollock and Wei Ting. This is where the center of the Canadian universe is focused on.
Yeah, I'm not expecting a ton of crossover there, but maybe there is. You know, you could consume all of it if you'd like. Should we take the time to maybe let people know about some of the other offerings in the Post Wrestling Cafe for the month of May?
What? There's more than just that? Wait, tell me more.
Okay, well, sometimes, like, I don't know how many people might listen to the other shows or if they just kind of tune in for these pay-per-views, but if this might happen to be one of the few podcasts you might listen to us. Well, we are basically supported by our Patreon, postwrestlingcafe.com, which means we are supported by all of you guys. In exchange for your support at $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com, we offer extended editions of all of our shows ad-free. So what you might typically hear on a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is sort of like an hour version of just like our reviews. They tend to go far longer than that in the Post Wrestling Cafe. I want to say about like 90 to 2 hours each. I think on Friday we did like 2.5 hours.
Dude,
way longer than we should have on a Friday.
Yeah.
But they include extended news discussions about the top stories of the day, feedback where we answer a lot of your questions, and it's all ad-free and even time-stamped for your convenience. You can listen on any podcast platform of your choice with your custom URL. But in addition to that, we also offer shows such as Rwanda Way, where we review retro shows from the past. John, Davey, and Brayden recently talked about WrestleMania 32. We've got an edition of Pollock and Ting Talk that's out right now, where we had a chance to discuss a lot of the big changes in our personal lives over the past month as well. Collision Course every single week, New Japan Pro Wrestling reviews. We have our Thunderbolts review from MCU Later that was just released this past week as well, and also Post Pro Res, and a whole lot of other bonus content that will just pop up in your feed if you subscribe at $6 a month, postwrestlingcafe.com.
Plop it down at postwrestlingcafe.com, and you get all of those bonus shows. And yes, the expanded editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown coming at you live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. But hey, we are bringing this for everyone tonight as we go through Backlash at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, Missouri. And of course, you have a 5-match show. You need 2 hours to talk about it beforehand to get everyone primed and ready for it. And we had a 2-hour discussion that was a 2-hour pre-show that can pretty much be limited, if you're scanning through this, to Wade Barrett's sit down with Randy Orton going into tonight's big match. He talked about his days in OVW with John Cena, the chemistry that the two have had throughout their many years, 93 matches involving each other. And Wade Barrett asked him, "Did you ever see a glimpse into this version of John Cena, Randy?" And wouldn't you know it, Randy has. He takes us back to OVW, and there was a group of them. And do you know how many times John Cena invited everyone back to his apartment?
Zero.
None.
Oh. Well, we've seen from Total Divas how particular he is about his living spaces, okay? Like, he might make you sign an NDA before you step foot into his apartment.
Yeah, I mean, just blank walls. I mean, I don't know what, 2001 John Cena's interior decor looked like, but yeah, that was the sign. It was like, he never invited anyone over to his apartment. I mean, this prick. And he states, "I'm going to win this title and then I'm going to do my own retirement tour. But my retirement tour isn't going to be over 30 more dates. My retirement tour is going to be over the next 5 to 10 years. The man is 45.
I mean, do you think that's so crazy?
No.
I could see Orton wrestling for 5 to 10 years. Absolutely.
Can he get bigger?
I guess it's still possible. Yes.
Yes. Well, that's his plan. He's going to wind things down over the next decade. The national anthem was sang by Prashard Owens, and we go into the show itself. And for tonight, it would be Michael Cole and Wade Barrett, because Pat McAfee will be in his match, so not on commentary for the show, and sticking with the two-man pairing. Opening things up is the United States Championship match with Jacob Fatu, LA Knight, Damian Priest, and Drew McIntyre. I want to say it was about 15 minutes of entrances here between these four before the bell rang to start this match. Everyone is chanting for Jacob Fatu. Although when LA Knight signaled to them for the yeah, I mean, this whole place just all screamed in concert with one another. It's Knight on offense early, and then Drew lays out everyone with neck breakers, and pretty much everyone but Jacob Fatu took turns on offense, and Priest would run into a Samoan drop on top of the barricade that Jacob Fatu gets in, and we finally get this showdown in the ring between Fatu and Drew as they come to blows, and Drew ends up raking the eyes, the number one target in WWE for the heels, and Drew gets placed into the Tree of Woe, but then does his sit-up suplex, sending Jacob off of the top into a swanton on top of the fallen LA Knight. And then Fatu continues with another swanton and hits Drew with a hip attack, dives through the ropes onto Priest, and this crowd's going insane for Jacob Fatu. And then we see just a litany of big moves here, and everyone ends up down after a BFT, a South of Heaven, and a Claymore. Knight ends up getting hit with a Future Shock and then a Claymore. And from there, we see Fatu ends up alone with Knight, misses the springboard moonsault, and it's Knight who hits the leaping elbows. And Priest and Drew, meanwhile, brawl into the crowd, and we just leave LA Knight and Jacob Fatu for like 3 minutes. We just don't know what's going on in the ring as these guys are out. They fight on top of these crates, and Damian Priest delivers a South of Heaven to Drew off this crate, but in doing so also jumps off himself. So they both go through this table and thus are taken out of the match. So LA Knight is left alone with Jacob Fatu. He clears the desk, and this desk, it would have to be preserved for the main event. So LA Knight, as he's getting ready for an elbow drop, he was going to do his nod to Shane McMahon here, but Solo Sikoa shows up and protects Jacob Fatu, getting him off of the desk. So as LA Knight goes after Solo Sikoa, a fan runs up to attack LA Knight. And wouldn't you know it, it is the United Empire's own Jeff Cobb, as Michael Cole screams, "That's one of the biggest free agents in the industry." I don't think they ever named him on the broadcast tonight.
I'm pretty sure I heard him say Jeff Cobb.
Did they? Okay, then yeah. I missed it. But yes, he got, when the camera cut to him, I mean, the whole crowd went nuts. Like, look at this guy in the background here. It's like, oh my God, it's Jeff Cobb. And then Fatu looks all confused. He was not clued into this plan by Solo Sikoa. He reluctantly returns to the ring, hip attack, moonsault, and pins LA Knight in 17 minutes and 55 seconds to open up the show, retains the U.S. title, and Michael Cole, the top voice in the game, says, "Last night, Solo Sikoa said he's all out of soldiers. I wonder if this is one of his new soldiers." I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Do you think he's aligned with Solo Sikoa, Way?
I think there's a very good chance.
I think so, too.
Now, I guess if we should look deeper into the comment to suggest maybe there's more than one soldier that's going to be aligned with Solo Sikoa. You know?
Oh, I think Hikuleo is putting his arm up. He's ready. He's ready to be called off the bench, Captain.
Sure, yeah.
I'll be a soldier.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I've got a black t-shirt.
Are you from the Pacific Islands? Do you happen to be over 6 feet tall? Apply now, you know, to join Solo Sikoa's bloodline.
We'll sign you. We don't know if we'll use you, but we'll sign you.
I thought it was a very good match, John. You know, I think WWE by this point, I mean, they always kind of have now, but like maybe just over this cycle, I noted, of course, there was a lot of criticism about the amount of multi-man matches heading into WrestleMania, but the quality of those multi-man matches coming out of WrestleMania, I think were met with like, you know, quite a bit of acclaim. And certainly for a B show like this, and for an IC title, there's really not any sort of criticism. All we can really are left with is just like anticipation for a good match, which you and I had, and this match delivered. They know how to book these multi-man matches really well. And I thought they delivered great, consistent action, never really a chance to slow down. Everybody got great spots in order to showcase themselves. Somebody who I think I'm often critical of in LA Knight, I thought actually looked really great here. You know, I think
he got a lot of spotlight. It seemed like the guy taking the fall, they were going to go overtime to give a lot to LA Knight in this match. He was very over with the crowd. I think the fact they were out first, like this was a pretty hot crowd tonight. I think the crowd was almost the story of this show beyond, like, I think they elevated a number of these matches that different crowds you might not have had the same reception to. But yeah, I thought the same with LA Knight. I think it's very clear that Drew and Damian come out of this with another match, whether it's a last man standing or some kind of stipulation that's tacked onto it, but that seemed to be one direction.
Just a note here, John Cena in the chat room says, PW Insider reported that Drew McIntyre is getting evaluated after the table spot. His head bounced off the floor. So we await for further updates on whether or not that's a possibility. I mean, I thought the match was really strong. You end up with a really good surprise here with Jeff Cobb now furthering this Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu divide. And I mean, Hanzi last night on Rewind of SmackDown in the Cafe Edition suggested that Bronson Reed could have been the person that Solo would be bringing in to oppose or to replace, you know, with Jacob Fatu. Cobb, I think, makes just as much sense. It's a great way to introduce him. And it also doesn't mean that we can't see Bronson Reed also brought into this position. You know, a new bloodline now of like Solo Sikoa with the Tongans, with Jeff Cobb, potentially with Hikuleo, potentially with a Bronson Reed. That's a pretty pretty meaty stable. So as a way
it's kind of like a redux of like what they did last year with like all the new ones coming in, and this is sort of the upgraded version.
But the focus now is to have opposition for Jacob Fatu, who is now your big project and already a very successful one. He is, again, technically a heel, but I think already very much a babyface. You would definitely say the biggest babyface of this particular match over an LA Knight.
Easily. Yeah. I would agree. Yeah. I like the match overall. I thought it was, it was a good start to the show. And I think it did set up a lot coming out of this. You got the appearance by Jeff Cobb. So, very storyline driven too, coming out of this, for pretty much all of the characters minus LA Knight have something, of significance coming out of it.
Yeah. I thought also like Cobb received a pretty good reaction in my opinion. Yep. I think better than I expected from a crowd. Like we're talking about somebody who was in Lucha Underground, but like
that's a Matanza.
Like he didn't even show his face then, and then like largely had his run in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So like without a prolonged exposure on a big two company, he was still met with like I think a bigger reaction than I was expecting.
They officially announced that Night of Champions, June 28th at the Kingdom Arena in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, will be taking place. So that will be their second PLE in June. Actually, third, if you want to include Worlds Collide, which is the same day as Money in the Bank. So
have they done Night of Champions in Saudi before, or is this the first time?
They promoted it as, the first time right. they've done it. Yeah.
So they're doing a swap now where Crown Jewel is out of Saudi, and they're bringing Night of Champions into Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
And next year it'll be Rumble in Saudi Arabia. So,
correct. Yes.
So they're no longer really like Saudi Arabia exclusive branded shows, right? Like they're
no, I mean maybe it's just matching. Yeah, mixing it up. This is also the same night. This will be an afternoon show in Saudi, but it's another example because that's the big International Fight Week card for UFC that night. So again, it's a lot of the. It's like this is going to be the third UFC pay-per-view in a row that piggybacks off of a WWE show the same day or night as well. And I'm curious if that's going to start to become a trend. They did plug UFC 315 on the broadcast tonight, and just by the timing of it all, like they want these shows done in time for the pay-per-view for UFC and not going over.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantanja products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day. Current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator, as of Q4 2024 in top five products.
Lyra Valkyria, Becky Lynch for the women's intercontinental title. Lyra was in control from the beginning, and she's like outclassing Becky, who's routinely getting frustrated. And Becky was getting a good amount of heat from this crowd. It wasn't as if they had to like fight the crowd here. Like, they were pretty, negative towards Becky. She starts attacking Lyra in front of this random man in the front row that is identified as Lyra's fiance.
Yeah, I mean, the reference was made to him in Becky's promo on Monday, saying, "I'm the reason you met, you know, your fiance." This is LJ Cleary, who is a wrestler from Ireland, and I have to imagine he will be further involved in some way later on.
Yeah, he was never referenced again beyond this. But he got a front row seat,
as a fiance would, you would hope.
Lyra slaps back, and there's a Bexploder that's countered to a Fisherman Buster, and Lyra hits this big superplex. Becky then counters a roll-up and gets caught grabbing the rope for leverage, and it's Lyra here going for the moonsault, landing on the knees of Becky, and Lyra gets out of a disarmer, applies her own armbar before Becky reapplies the disarmer, and we see two attempts at the manhandle slam. The second one she hits, and Lyra kicks out. The crowd is applauding as Becky is getting further upset. Jessica Carr then stops Becky, who has grabbed a chair. So with the back turn, Becky takes off the turnbuckle pad, and the crowd really gets into the sequence of near falls for Lyra. She gets shoved toward the buckle, but avoids it and takes another manhandle slam and kicks out. This is when Jessica Carr spots the exposed turnbuckle, and she has to divert her attention from the athletes. And wouldn't you know it, just as she turns her back, Lyra hits the Nightwing, and Carr quickly has to get away from the turnbuckle to go count three, and the delay allows Becky to kick out. And then Becky, what does she do? She goes to the eyes. Let's keep count, okay, of these eye spots on this show. And she rolls up Becky, but it's countered, and Lyra cradles her, hooking the leg, and gets the flash pin on Becky in 18 minutes and 15 seconds that these two went. And I thought that if you were to tell me these two are going to go 18 minutes, I would say that you would run the risk of this audience not really being behind Lyra for an extended period of time like that. But that was not the case. I thought the crowd was with them for pretty much the whole way here. And I thought these two clicked really well together. I thought this was one of the better matches on the show, but like by the end of it. I mean, we're only talking about five matches, but I thought that this was a really good match that these two had. I enjoyed this quite a bit.
I thought it was a great match. You know, I questioned initially Lyra being the babyface in this feud with a heel Becky, because I worried that a heel Becky just meant that she would be a cooler Becky, and that, you know, a bit of a sort of unknown babyface in Lyra Valkyria would somehow drown, you know, in contrast to her. But Lyra did tremendously well in the promos leading up to this, to the point where I think she's more than kind of held her own against as cool of a heel as Becky Lynch might be. But after seeing the match, I get it even more, because Lyra is a fantastic babyface wrestler. She is a fantastic technical wrestler, and I think she's been for a long time. But in this match, you finally got an opponent that people cared about seeing her wrestle against, a storyline that people can finally get invested in with her. And they were with her throughout this entire match. And of course it relied on the help of a fantastic heel in Becky Lynch here, you know, to guide her along, slowing down her offense and showing frustration enough to set up Lyra for those big comebacks. Very strong underdog win for Lyra. And, you know, I think in our predictions, I believe that this feud would continue. And therefore,
I thought Becky would get the belt in this match.
Yeah. I think we both expected Becky to win, but like seeing the result of this, Becky still lost, but the feud is still hot enough, you know, via this post-match attack, that I think there's still enough interest in seeing a rematch. There's something involving this fiance I'm expecting to play out on television as well. So this has been really productive, really strong for both Becky Lynch and especially for Lyra.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get LJ versus Becky on TV.
Maybe we could get the two husbands, husband versus fiance.
I don't know if Seth and Becky, they probably have that in their contracts. So we don't do stuff together on camera anymore.
Got it.
But yeah, Becky beat her up after the match and applied the disarmer as the officials had to run in. The officials had a very busy night of run-ins. Dominic Mysterio, Penta for the Intercontinental title. And I thought this was going to be tough at the beginning because as soon as the match begins, we're right back to WrestleMania and the crowd is singing for Dominic. And it just feels like Penta is kind of fighting from underneath here because the whole crowd is just getting behind Dominic. And
I would say it was like 50-50. It wasn't overwhelmingly like pro Dominic, you know, and if it was another babyface that wasn't as hot as Penta being opposed to Dom, then I think that would have been trouble. But the crowd like just still really loves Penta. And I would say it was more 50-50 in my opinion.
Well, at the beginning here, while they're singing, Dominic does this suicide dive into a DDT. And it's like they went wild for this. And it did look great the way he hit this. Then it got into like dueling chants for the two of them. Dominic is mocking Penta's walk, and then Penta lands a high cross off the top of the post to the floor. In the ring, Penta ducks a 619, but then Dominic connects with Oblivion for a two count. And on the edge of the apron, Penta hits this great-looking destroyer, and this is when Carlito comes down, distracting the referee. So Balor and JD come over the barricade from the crowd. They grab Penta, and Balor takes his time going over to the timekeeper's area, grabbing a chair, and takes so long that the referee catches him before they can attack Penta, and Judgment Day are ejected. And the idea here that Balor was dragging his feet here at Dominic's expense. So Penta goes for a Topikon Hero, takes out JD and Carlito, but they note Balor seemed to get out of the way at the last minute. And Balor appears on the apron, distracting the referee when El Grande Americano shows up, headbutting Penta with the loaded mask, and Dominic wins with a frog splash in 11 minutes and 20 seconds. Listen, this was total TV, but it was a title defense for Dominic with a dozen run-ins here to get to this end goal. And it would appear to be Penta with part of the Lucha contingent to feud with El Grande Americano.
Yeah, which is what they've been setting up on TV, you know, already. I think everybody expected interference in this, but I didn't think, for me, it stopped the match from being very satisfying. I think most interesting coming out of this match is the continued babyface reaction to Dominic Mysterio, one that I think they're playing into right now by, you know, in this match, giving Dom in excellent babyface shine at the beginning of this match. It's organic, and tonight I think they proved that WrestleMania wasn't just, you know, a blip. It was it's now a trend, and they're encouraging it. They're not to mention like the threat of Finn Balor turning on Dominic. You know, it's very much like Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu, with Balor in the Solo Sikoa role and Dominic Mysterio now in the Jacob Fatu role, ready to turn babyface really at any time. So I think
if that is the way you go, there is the natural direction of this whole tease of another Judgment Day member that Balor keeps turning down, and mm-hmm. it's Balor who enlist the new member, and they kick out Dominic. I mean, that's a long-term thing that you can go with at some point. I thought this was overall like the weakest match of the five on this show. By the end of it, it just felt like a extended Raw match. I mean, not even an extended Raw match. It was about the length they would have had on TV. It furthers, you know, your dissension with Judgment Day. But I also went into this show with I didn't have any like higher expectations for this either. And I guess your mileage will vary of like what you expect on these monthly shows. But this kind of just felt like a means for television progression.
I would agree there. I had sort of tame expectations for this, and I thought it exceeded it. And I think so much of that was helped by the crowd reaction for Dominic.
They had a great crowd on Saturday. I think that is one of my biggest notes for maybe every one of the matches. For Raw, we already have the announced tag match with Io Sky and Rhea Ripley against Roxanne and Julia. They've also announced CM Punk will appear on the show Monday. And then they announced Jey Uso and Logan Paul for the World Heavyweight title at Saturday night's main event in 2 weeks' time. So we have one match confirmed for Saturday night's main event.
I think it's a strong match to do for a Saturday night's main event with Logan Paul, obviously, you know, being as big of a mainstream name as you can get appearing on NBC. Curious to see if the ratings will reflect any difference for this particular show versus some of the other Saturday night's main events, if they manage to maybe even draw a different crowd than they usually do.
Yep, you've got this. I mean, John Cena's all over the advertising, so he should be there in some way, shape, or form. So, I mean, it does show you that they are, you know, treating these still as big shows to put this on. Way's main event was next. Pat McAfee against Gunther. Michael Cole gives us he discloses, I am going to be biased. I hope that Pat McAfee embarrasses Gunther and I should be allowed to have an opinion after 28 years here. Well, Gunther did not get embarrassed in this match. That's my disclaimer at the beginning here. So Pat comes out. He gets a pretty strong reaction. I thought the best performer on this entire show of all of these matches was Gunther. I thought that this was the best performer at Backlash 2025. Pat wants to wrestle him right away. What did you think of Pat's attire? He came out here in a football jersey and then he wrestled in his jeans and sneakers.
I think it was
this fit for him.
Like it was fine for, I feel like what this might like, I don't know if he needed to show up in like a wrestling outfit. Like, I feel like the effect should be, this is a guy stepping out of the commentary desk, completely out of his element. He should look like a normal person, just, you know, with his shirt off. And obviously with the shirt off so that we could hear the smack of those tops. But I thought it was appropriate for the setting.
Well, Pat tries to wrestle and he avoids a chop. Early on, everyone is chanting for Pat. There was no 50-50 among this crowd. And Gunther just plays with him, placing him down on the apron and pats him on the head. And Pat then springs over the top and unfortunately just trips. Lands right on his face, but gets right up. And
even that's also fine. Again, he's not supposed to be a wrestler. He's a commentator who doesn't usually do this. He should screw up. Right.
Yep. Michael Cole cites like this is his inexperience and he just gets chopped as a result of this. Now, if this had been our previous administration, this would have been replayed like 15 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then aired again on Monday. Pat attacks him with punches that I will say this are above Shane McMahon level. And lands his own chops before Gunther drops him.
The difference is like Shane would have been promoted on commentary as like,
look at those strikes.
Devastating striker. Shane
oh
McMahon.
My goodness.
Still nurse.
Lights
Shane
out.
McMahon.
Lights out Shane O'Mac. Gunther just needs one chop to drop him and then starts attacking him. Michael Cole, who, I mean, he might've been grating for some, but I thought he added a lot because he's not even calling this match. He is cheerleading and screaming at Gunther to just end this. And he is just like, I thought Cole was as much part of this match as the two guys in the ring. And Wade Barrett was kind of just there for just very, very small little descriptions. And it was Cole just like reacting to this.
Well, Barrett kind of took over commentary, you know, later on in this match. And Barrett's role was to be able to say, Michael Cole, what are you doing? Sit down. You're going to get yourself hurt. You know, he was there to play a concerned parent.
So there are chops delivered by both and Gunther just boots him down and the crowd is screaming. You tapped out. Pat manages a series of slaps. So Gunther hits him with a German, applies the choke, but Pat fights to his feet. I mean, this guy, a product of 80s and 90s babyface comebacks, and he gets hit with another German and Gunther just laughs as Michael Cole is pleading. So Pat elbows him off of the turnbuckle and goes for a moonsault, lands on his feet. Gunther grabs him, goes for another German. Pat lands on his feet again. And Cole reminds us this was not going to be a 5-star classic. And then Pat channels Sheamus with a brogue kick, then a super kick. Gunther power bombs him and Cole is screaming as Gunther applies a Boston crab. Cole gets into the ring. Walks up to the ring and he's slapping the mat, encouraging Pat to fight as Gunther puts him into a crucifix. He's dropping elbows and then Gunther, he then puts his attention over to Michael Cole and Pat ends up stopping a power bomb to Michael Cole, and we get the Rick Rude, Bobby Heenan spot with Ultimate Warrior, where the suplex, Gunther gets tripped up by Michael Cole. He holds down the foot of Gunther. It's like, if this is the finish, this will be brutal. But no, Gunther kicks out of this, and Cole is now going to get murdered. And Gunther stares down Cole like he's going to kill this guy. And Pat gets out of a choke, is hit with the lariat, and now Gunther is ready to put this guy to sleep. He applies the choke, and I kid you not, Pat starts to hulk up, and this was the best hulk up ever, because it was what me and my friends would always joke about. What would be the best Hogan finish is he finishes the comeback where he just plops down. He can't do it, and he gets beat. And that's what happened to Pat here. He could not complete the hulk up, and he's brought back down into the quicksand, and he goes out in 14 minutes as Gunther wins. And afterwards, Pat makes it to his feet. The crowd is cheering for him. Gunther shows his respect to Pat McAfee before walking off, and Pat gets a standing ovation at the end of this.
Yeah. You know, my expectations for this match were not low at all. I was actually anticipating this match the most out of the five on this particular show. And I can say my expectations were exceeded by the quality of this match. I thought my biggest concern for this match was that they would book this match with Pat McAfee suddenly getting off of the commentary desk and into the ring and suddenly being able to equal Gunther. I think that would have been the biggest mistake. They did not do that. They booked Pat McAfee like he was a commentator who should not be in the ring with Gunther and was there to get beaten up by Gunther. This was about an 80-20, I wouldn't even say like 90-10 Gunther match, with him dominating this like commentator who should not be there. But they did rely on, I mean, what makes Pat work in these sort of situations is that he is a notable athlete, you know, somebody who had a professional football career of accomplishment. So
like he's Steve McMichael, like the guy that comes off the booth, and he was like an NFL caliber player.
Yeah, but they booked McMichael like way
he was a horseman. Yeah,
like I know they booked him way too hard. Like this was an appropriate level of booking for a former football player who suddenly finds himself in the ring with like, you know, the best wrestler that's out there right now. So Pat has just the right amount of credibility for you to buy into those kicks, buy into those punts, and buy into some of those hope spots. But it was the Michael Cole elements that really lifted this match for me. You know, they weren't necessarily the parts of the match that I was predicting that would take place, but once he got in there, I mean, this match was just kind of taken to a different level. It led to some excellent false finishes, and by the end they achieved the highest crowd reactions up until this point. And they rehabbed Gunther, in my opinion, after the Jay loss by giving him like a very sort of like big feeling match where he came out of it looking like that much more of a monster. They gave Pat McAfee the sort of great moral victory performance that I think they are all looking for. And it gave us like ultimately like a very memorable Gunther match that I thought was a great follow-up to the Jay loss at Mania.
I think as I look back at this card, if you were to tell me like what was the best match on this show, I would say like bell to bell, like best wrestling match, I would go with the women's match. But this, to me, was the best presentation on the show. And what I mean by that is that I think sometimes when we are just assessing these matches, it's to what Wei said. If Pat McAfee came out here and all of a sudden he's wrestling like he's Finn Balor, it totally does not service the story, nor can this guy wrestle like that. Like, as a quote-unquote wrestler, like, he's awful. Like, he is really out of his depth. And that is the story. And this would be how you would book someone in this situation. If Stokely Hathaway is built up for a match down the road in AEW, I don't want to see him come out there and be going 50-50 with Adam Cole. I want to see him be Stokely Hathaway. And Pat McAfee, performed as Pat McAfee here. And this guy should be outclassed. And he should be a guy that has had 8 wrestling matches and looked like it against a world class wrestler, but he's a babyface that this whole crowd believed in. And I would argue like this was like the most I won't say it was the most engaged. They were very engaged for this main event we're mm-hmm. about to get into. But this, to me, totally held its weight on a pay-per-view. Like, what I think, and Wade talked about it with me as well last night, was probably the best promoted match of this card. I thought they did a really great job. And what you got out of this, 14 minutes, did not overstay its welcome. And you never felt stupid watching Gunther have to sell for this guy in some mm-hmm. ridiculous fashion. And Pat McAfee played Pat McAfee perfect. And I think like that, if they came out and just had this like beautiful, smooth wrestling match, you're so missing the point of what this needed to be. It delivered what it absolutely had to be, and I was very entertained by it.
Yeah. I like Pat at this level. Like maybe one match every few years, you know, with the right opponent, of course, you know. But I don't necessarily need to see more of Pat than this. This, I thought, you know, made him feel like a special attraction. I'm sure we'll get some great publicity, maybe even outside of professional wrestling circles, and resulted.
Listen, you got a star promotion of this every day on ESPN this past week. Like every day he was talking about this match and promoting it through those channels. The one thing I thought they were just going to do like just destruction of chops on Pat McAfee, and he took the chops, but I thought this was going to be like the instead of like the Cena taking all the Germans, it was going to be Pat taking just an ungodly amount of like he would just be hamburger meat on his chest.
Right,
but it was very red by the end of it. Like,
yeah, there are a lot of chops. I don't know if you can always count. Well, I mean, that's the reason for no shirt, I would assume, you know, on Pat McAfee. And we'll see the result of it tomorrow, I believe. But it resulted in, I think, like a great like star performance for Gunther to hopefully a different audience than usual.
What did you make about doing the respect thing at the end of this?
I thought it was appropriate for the story you want coming out of this. Again, the moral victory for Pat McAfee, somebody who came in here and got beaten up, but did better than his opponent expected. So I thought it was just the way to cement that.
Yeah, I was not like sold on that, but I want to see what they do.
What's the harm in doing
that? I don't want to give Gunther any kind of redeeming factor here coming out of this. Like, he should be the bully. And now there should be like a bigger threat to stand up to Gunther after this.
Well, I do wonder. I mean, we're past now his reign as champion. Should we be at the point where we're flirting with the idea of a babyface Gunther?
I don't think. I think you have so much fuel left in the tank. I think this guy is like arguably like, if not the top heel in this company, like he is among them. I think he's so great in this role as just the wrestling snob, but has his like blind spots and can be beat in like against the wrong opponent. And I think I just think you can really run with this guy for a much longer time.
Yeah. And we got Goldberg presumably coming up as well. So I guess he'd have to stay heel for that. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
To the main event we go, John Cena, Randy Orton for the undisputed WWE Championship. Randy comes out. Insane reaction for Randy coming out. And how many times did they have to repeat his theme on the way to the ring? Because this guy milked his song for like ever. This was a long entrance for Randy Orton. He was going Sandman level here.
Yeah, by this point, I was kind of catching up on my buffer. So
this is where you could be 30 minutes behind and you're like, okay, we have in between with entrances. I'll be caught up in no time.
I'm somebody who never complains about like the length of these in between interstitials and commercial breaks, because I just end up skipping them all because I start the show later and it's perfectly fine.
Any season pro never watches these live. Mm-hmm. So Cena comes out, and I mean, I will say that the atmosphere was incredible here at the beginning. Like, they were going nuts for this match before they even touched. So the bell rings, Cena extends his hand, but it's just to lure in Randy, to poke him in the eye, and Randy fell for it. But then Randy pokes John in the eye, so both guys are holding their eyes. Part of me just wanted to watch a whole match where they had to, like, sell blindness in one eye.
Yeah, I do think that's actually a very valid criticism. Like, maybe there was some lack of communication amongst these agents. WWE tends to, like, be pretty good about, like, not making sure, like, body parts aren't worked on throughout multiple matches on the same show. And spots like this one taking place throughout multiple matches on the show is, to me, a valid point of criticism.
I wish I was keeping track of this, but it feels in the last, like, 6 months or so, like, the eye poke has just become the go-to, and not just in WWE. AEW uses it a lot too, but WWE is at another level. That is like the go-to heel move now. It's replaced throwing the shoulder into the post in the corner that used to be just the go-to in every single match.
Eye pokes so in 2025.
Totally in, yeah. Like, let's work over the retina. The crowd is chanting, "You can't wrestle." Yes, he can, at John Cena. Go with the latter. Cena goes to leave. He's done. He's done with St. Louis. So Orton goes after him, and Cena goes on offense. I think Pat McAfee's punches look better than John Cena's on this particular night. And Randy gets control and goes on top in the turnbuckle for 20 punches that the crowd counted along with. And then we got a first way. Dueling sleeper spots back and forth between the two of them.
They weren't even so much sleepers as they were like just chokes. Straight up headlocks, right? Don't you think?
I think the first one was a sleeper, and then they got kind of lax and they just became kind of, more headlock ish.
Yeah, I mean, I actually felt this was a pretty clever spot, and I wonder if there was some sort of commentary that was attempted here, because these two are of the era where headlocks were just like a constant in every single one of these matches.
Oh, Randy loved his headlock spots.
Oh my god, like it was practically one of his signature moves back then, you know. But like, it was a time where in the WWE it almost felt like, hey, you have to make time for a rest hold, and the rest hold more often than not would be a rear chin lock or a fucking headlock. And I don't know if this was just their attempt at like calling attention to that. Like, we're of the ruthless aggression era where everybody had to fit in a 2 minute headlock in the middle of their match, so we're going to battle over headlocks. And then they actually got a great reaction for this little headlock battle.
Well, we were about to get into finisher territory. Okay, we were gonna get countless RKOs and AAs, beginning with Orton hitting the draping DDT. He calls for the RKO, but Cena blocks it. And as Cena goes for the AA, Randy comes down into an RKO. So both men are down. Mm-hmm. What this did to me was it kind of shines a light on how the RKO is like a devastating move, not just for the person taking it, but also for the guy delivering it. When it's like you're taking this, you're almost taking the same impact of an AA, minus the rotation off the shoulder. Like, you're still taking a giant back bump.
Okay. I don't disagree with you when you're actually injecting real physics into it, but the difference is, in professional wrestling, if you are pushed into a back bump, then it becomes an offensive maneuver. If you are willingly jumping up and landing on your back, well, then that shouldn't hurt you at all. And in this case, he was in the middle of being pushed onto his back via AA as he also delivered his RKO.
It's that arc that really does cause the
debilitating damage. I thought it was a pretty sweet counter.
I don't know if Colin Barrett quite knew what it was until the replay aired. But like they hit what they were trying to do here. Like, you could see exactly what they were doing here. So they're both down. They get into a strike battle, and we get the AA that is hit, and Randy kicks out. Michael Cole says, "Tonight this crowd has been invested in every move of every match tonight." Listen, this was a great crowd, but every move in every match. That's very detailed. Cena comes off the ropes with his shoulder tackles and then gets hit with an RKO and he rolls away. So he's in the corner. Orton sizes him up for the punt, but Cena moves away and he hits another AA, which Randy kicks out. So then Cena starts slapping the mat like he's Randy and calling upon the RKO. I was so waiting for a John Cena RKO, because I think it would have just been a just glorious disaster if he tried one.
It would look like his springboard stunner.
I was waiting for this, but he decides to go for his own punt and he misses Randy's head, And so Cena shoves Orton into the referee. And this was our first ref bump of the match as Chad Patton goes down. Wouldn't you know it, he hits an AA to Randy. And then Cena goes to the floor. He grabs the title. Michael Cole, why? Why are you doing this? And he gets back into the ring, right into an RKO. And the ref is starting to regain consciousness as he comes over. Delayed count. So Cena kicks out and the crowd chants bullshit. So Orton goes to the floor, clears the desk. And we get Cena shoving Orton into Chad Patton. So Chad Patton, as Michael Cole notes, his head slammed into the steps. So we may have a man that has been killed in action.
A ramming into the steps is good, at least for, I think, a 10-minute ref bump. Yeah.
Lyra Valkyria caught in a disarmer. We'll get all the agents out. Chad Patton potentially severing his head from his shoulders. He can tough it out. He's fine. So he just lays there for like 5 minutes. Orton, so they do the spot where Orton counters and he delivers an AA to Cena on top of the desk, which doesn't break at first, but then collapses. And you see these two like communicating here on the floor, and they move over to the other side of the ring where Orton pulls out a table and does another AA, putting Cena through the table, and then he takes a drink of Prime.
Just felt like maybe a moment where Orton wanted to deliver a proper table break to this crowd, and so they extended the match a bit to basically redo the table.
Send this crowd home happy. Yeah. Give them their table. So there's an RKO into the ring, and then another referee runs down, only a two count. So Cena grabs the belt, misses Orton. He takes out the second ref, Eddie Arango. And then another RKO is hit, but there's no ref. So now the officials come out. Chad Patton, who's in a coma on the floor, but they're in here to check on Eddie Arango. So definitely favored nations here among the referees. All this is in, and Orton is pissed about everything that's going on here, all the ref bumps, so he takes out Nick Aldis for the third time with an RKO, and this time he has not paid the fine in advance, so this will be maybe another 50K, if not more. And then we see Shane Helms, Sean Devari, and Jamie Noble all take RKOs. The crowd's going nuts for this, and Orton goes for one more punt when who runs in to protect John Cena? R-Truth. And Randy is livid. What are you doing? So he takes out R-Truth with an RKO, and with his back turned, Cena hits a low blow and a belt shot as Chad Patton, he's alive. He returns from the dead and counts three as John Cena retains the championship in a match that went, 27 minutes and 50 seconds.
Okay. Wow. Well, I guess for the last time, maybe that somewhat felt appropriate. Honestly, for 27 minutes, that surprises me because this crowd was really hot throughout the entire thing.
They were very hot for this.
I'm about to give my opinion on this match, and I'm already seeing some of the reactions online, and I'm already starting to realize, okay, this is going to be one of those instances where I might be on an island. But I thought this match was fantastic. I did not expect this level of quality from these two at this point in their careers, having seen this match so often. What to me was novel about the match was that they found a way to have a different type of match than any of the other matches in their catalog. And you're already getting that because the dynamics of their characters are so different. But they played to those dynamics, I think, incredibly well, to the point where I thought this was like some of the loudest reactions that these two have ever received for one of their pairings. I thought the first half of the match, they did a great job of conveying the stalemate between the two. Now, of course, it's two men who have wrestled each other, for decades now. So they showed that by having them counter each other's every move, including each other's five moves of doom, right? They managed to successfully convey that they're both sort of these like equal supermen of their eras with very balanced attributes for one another. And then that... Even before the shenanigans, I actually was just quite enjoying this match. And to me, I get the sense you might differ, but I thought it showed me that like Cena can still have a good match, and that the Cody match to me was not necessarily an indicator of like what his wrestling level is. Yes, he's not the athlete that he used to be, but I think he's still a good enough athlete to be able to put on a performance like this, going 27 minutes, lifting the crowd up for an extended portion of the way that they did. Once they got to the shenanigans, I actually felt like the match got even better. And I mean, talking to our audience, I think a lot of people hate run-ins, and I definitely do hate run-ins when it's overused, when it's lazy, and when it's overdone on, like, let's say just a mid-card TV match, for instance, or even, but like, there are instances where I find it appropriate, and this was one of those instances where I kind of found it appropriate. And I just thought every interference, every ref bump, every ebb and flow of the booking here made for a compelling near fall and elevated what was already a really hot crowd even hotter. Every visionary fall, of course, was also done to, you know, ultimately give Randy Orton some level of protection in the loss. And I thought they were successful in doing that. I said, you know, the mark of success for this match would be their ability to get the crowd to bite on at least one near fall, which is, I think, very difficult because this is Cena's first defense after WrestleMania. And this crowd bit on more than one near fall, you know. So in defeat, I thought, like, this was way better than I was expecting these two. And I thought it was actually one of Orton's probably best singles matches of his recent years.
Yeah, I don't know what the online response has been like. I haven't sought that out. I definitely didn't think this was like bad. I did not think as highly of it as you did. But ultimately, this was 28 minutes and you had a crowd that was super engaged for this match. And typically, like, that's your litmus test. Like, did this work for the audience? And it totally did. And quite frankly, I think this is the type of match that would have been way better received if Cody and Cena had put forth something like this last month, and mm-hmm. you did not get this. And as I said during our preview, I thought that the match, based on how they end it, it could leave people with like a bad taste in their mouth, or they hit the landing and people will think very highly of this show. I didn't necessarily think either. Like, I don't think the run-ins were just such groan-inducing. I felt like these two, you know, it's the kind of match that is going to play to Cena's, like, strengths in 2025. Like, I don't think... Like, you need every bell and whistle, I think, for a big John Cena main event these days.
Especially as a heel.
And mm-hmm. you can get away with doing a lot of this stuff. And listen, they had this crowd amped for 28 minutes. So that was a win. Like, this blew away the Cody match last month. And if you were to tell me these two matches, like, I thought Cody and Cena, I thought they would have had, like, I just thought they would have had, like, an electric match that would have been more typical of, like, what him and Randy produced here. So, like, listen, I thought this was, like, very satisfying for the audience, and I think it was heavily reliant on just spamming finishers, but it was ones that the crowds, they bit on so much in this. Like, it's the run-ins were it was a ton for me, but, like, that's where it just kind of just felt as though it was you know, they did what they needed to do. Like, it wasn't my style of, like, main event that I'm going to.
But if you're watching Cena versus Orton in 2025, expecting, like, a pure rules, you know, type of match, I think you're probably kind of deluding yourself, right? Like, these two are sports entertainers of a WWE style. There's going to be run-ins. But to me, like, I don't mind run-ins when it's used creatively. And to, like, I look at the run-in as like a weapon or like a move of a wrestler or of a storyteller, I should really say. And I thought, like, the run-ins were used well to deliver great near falls in this match.
Yeah, I think it's something that it's a larger aspect of, I feel like, on a show like this. Like, we don't even have to look at, like, a longer example list. But, you know, when you have a show that, like, three of these matches, they're all contingent on the person that is interfering that leads to the finish. I think, like, you save that stuff if you're doing a match like this that that you look at. That maybe this is not the show for a match that is all centered around Judgment Day for a finish. Like, the Cobb thing, I think you get away with. That was a big pop for his appearance. But like at the end of this, listen, these two exceeded my expectations because mine were very low coming off that Cody match of him and Orton. The idea of going 28 minutes, I just would have thought that it would have dragged, it would have not looked pretty at times, and it would have been overbooked. And you can say it was overbooked. I think that's a fair criticism, but did it work for the audience? You have to be honest there and say that it totally worked for this audience. And I think you came out of it where Randy did not feel like some incompetent babyface in terms of how he was handled. You know that, like, I look at this R-Truth thing, and it's like, I'm looking forward to whatever they have planned for Cena and R-Truth down the road, and you're continuing. This is the one guy that is still loyal to John Cena, and you know Cena's going to just screw this guy up.
Well, so just on that note, at the press conference, we did have a scene where John Cena put R-Truth through the press table.
Oh, my God.
With an AA. So
they did this at the press conference? Oh, I take back everything.
Well, I mean, it's...
Why are you doing this at the press conference?
Hold on a second. This is the Levesque playbook, you know? They did a scene, they did an angle, they did the turn for Owens and Cody, not on air at all, through a cell phone.
Do you know how great of a reaction that would be if R-Truth was in the ring and he's just praising his hero, John Cena, and giving some, like, heartfelt speech, and Cena fucks him right there in the ring? The crowd, I mean, they love this guy.
You could say
You're
that
You're doing
about-
it in front of, like... 20 media reporters. I did not watch this, so I can't comment on it, but I would have done this in a bigger angle for sure.
You could have said that about Owens turning on Cody as well, right? Like, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but ultimately
it was the opposite way. The fear was that you have Owens attack Cody in front of fans. They might cheer Kevin Owens. You're not getting people cheering John Cena for attacking our truth.
I wouldn't be so sure about that either.
Feel very strongly on this one.
Anyway, you know, Levesque loves to, like, you know, use his mixed media in order to, you know, tell his stories beyond, you know, the confines of the actual PLE window, right? So this, to me, just kind of felt like something like that. Well, so it looks like we're getting, I have to think, Truth and Cena, maybe for TV or something. Maybe even a
Saturday night's main event. Like, that's kind of your level of match for a Cena on a Saturday night's main event, I guess. Yeah. I don't really need to see a match between these two, but I guess if you're doing this, maybe they'll go face to face at the next press conference. Maybe we'll have a debate.
I mean, you know, Truth might just end up justifying this action as an action of love somehow, and maybe further the story that way. We'll see.
Okay. Well, another award-winning press conference from the WWE.
Are you sad you didn't make it to this one?
No, I can't say I'm regretting not making a trip to St. Louis, Missouri.
Up next,
this.
We go to a question from John Pollock after this this table break.
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on the amended complaint that was allowed this week by Judge Russell. Yes, at the end of the show, John Cena got onto the microphone. He told them to kill the music. I don't need it. And says, what I need is competition. I thought they were teasing, like someone showing up here at the end, because they had plenty of time if they wanted to go to the top of the hour. But no, it was just, I don't need you. This is what their last real champ looks like. And that was it. We just got the end of the show. So it was kind of just until this R-Truth deal afterwards, you were kind of left with like what is next for Cena. Cause I didn't feel like there was enough here that they were going to like run back Randy for one of these shows. It kind of feels like they will just move on from this.
They told us this was the last time.
Well, I mean, once in a lifetime, right? I mean,
I guess we'll see
until next year.
So what's the PLE schedule coming up?
So Saturday night's main event, Money in the Bank. And then the Saudi show at the end of June. And then from there, it's nothing till SummerSlam.
Okay.
So that's kind of our next schedule there.
How many Cena appearances do you expect between now and then? Like matches, I want to say.
Even. Oh, matches. Yeah. I guess the question is whether he wrestles at both Saturday Night's Main Event and Money in the Bank. Like that seems like a lot for... I would kind of isolate and do one of those. I like your idea of like do a segment. Like to me, I would have built up to this R-Truth thing at that. But I don't think you want to build R-Truth up to some like big match either. I guess the question is even is he listed here on Cena is advertised for Money in the Bank. So presumably that's the next big match, and maybe you get by the Saturday night's main event with something with Truth or even just a
segment. You expect him in Saudi?
Cena? Oh, that'll be interesting.
He opted not to go before.
He's gone back, though. He has gone back since. Yeah. Oh, okay. So, potentially, yeah. The farewell in Saudi Arabia. That'll be the last one. I think the next one is not till the Rumble next year. I thought the show, it was a thumbs in the middle show for me. I thought that there was, I wasn't really like, throw out Dominic and Penta. I don't think there were any like disappointing matches. I think everything delivered like what I thought. I thought Gunther and Pat McAfee, I think I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I thought there were like some good matches on this show overall for like a 2-hour and 45-minute show, very like easily digestible show that did not drag for me, but don't watch live. That's my pro tip. Solid thumbs in the middle show for me. I'm not going thumbs up on the event.
It was thumbs up for me. I was entertained by almost everything on the show, you know, and we're talking about a card of five. I think it's, you expect like a high level of entertainment for every match because there's so little that you really have to be talking about. But I thought Gunther and McAfee over-delivered. I thought Cena and Orton over-delivered. I thought the women's match with Becky and Lyra.
I really liked that match a lot.
It was a great technical wrestling match. And so for those of you that are looking more for like straight up professional wrestling, I think that might have satisfied you guys. But like I'm the type of fan who kind of likes sports entertainment in addition to technical wrestling. I thought this show provided that. The four-way was also a very good technical wrestling match. Like Penta and Dom, pretty forgettable coming out of it, but it also didn't offend me at all because of the interest in seeing the crowd react to Dom.
Yeah. And I mean, of the matches, like again, throw out the IC title match, like of those four, like there was like very, like all four were very distinct from each other too. Mm-hmm. Like each of them like had kind of their various, like you had your total sports entertainment presentation for the main event. You had like a heated, like personal issue with like the broadcaster versus the big bully. Then like the four way, which was just a collection of, you know, just, you know, your big multi-man spectacle that WWE is very good at. And then you had like very good wrestling contest with Lyra and Becky as well. So it was like quite a distinction. But there you go. That was Backlash from St. Louis. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, including an in-depth look at WrestleMania 32 from 2016, a 2003 edition of SmackDown featuring the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, and a special patron's pick where you get to choose what John and Wei review. MCU later returns with a review of Thunderbolts. Pollock and Ting will sit down and talk. We've also got coverage of Wrestling Dontaku, Collision Course every Saturday night, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. $6 a month gets you in the door at postwrestlingcafe.com. We have some time for some feedback, Wei, so let us see what everyone had to say about Backlash. We start off with Brian from New Jersey, who writes that, I thought Backlash was enjoyable overall, and I very much appreciated its efficient pace. Shorter than SmackDown. Even though four of the five matches had interference, I thought the main event was fine, but the ending was overbooked nonsense. The matches I liked the most were Lyra and Becky and Gunther McAfee, both exceeding my expectations. Lots of candidates for this, but Gunther might be the best bell-to-bell wrestler in the company right now. When Jeff Cobb shared that photo of himself overlooking the ocean and teasing retirement, we now know there was clearly a red herring in those was there one person that thought he was retiring? I didn't sense like one person on that. Happy to finally see him here. I think we can all see where this story is with Solo and Jacob and where it's going. I hope it's fulfilling for him and not his last story.
All right, let's go to Jeremy in Texas, who says, how appropriate that the rivalry of Cena and Orton in an era of WWE that was 50-50 booking was tied 9-9 before tonight. I think Cena's match was better than what we saw at WrestleMania. It certainly seemed like Cena took a few more bumps considering he went through two tables. I'm hoping this belt shot to the head finish isn't going to continue to happen during this title reign. It feels a bit flat, but maybe that is the point. I would suggest that is exactly the point. Unless you're going back to Cody or Orton, I have no clue where they can go for Cena's next opponent. There really isn't a babyface ready for a title shot. But there wasn't the angle with R-Truth, so maybe that Saturday night's main event. Those pressers really have fallen off. Truth seems to be the direction, and then maybe coming out of that, like, who is your big baby face that you would put up against Cena next?
Yeah.
Now, Cody at some point has to return.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're looking at Money in the Bank, I mean, that to me is not – that's way too early for that.
Are we thinking about SmackDown? Are we limited to SmackDown babyface
options? No, you're not limited to one roster. I mean, it's yeah, I'd have to give it some thought. I don't have like there isn't the obvious choice like right.
Is Knight too low on the totem pole?
I wouldn't have been booking him like this tonight if LA Knight was in that position. So no, I wouldn't say that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll give that some thought.
John Cena, he says, since Lorenzo has now started watching regular PLEs since Mania and does a live watch along on his iPad with his friend Benjamin, I'll end this with their overall summary. This was low key much better than Mania Night 1. Yes, they cooked. The Adventures of Lorenzo and Benjamin. So do check out their live watch along podcast.
Would you agree that you wouldn't agree that the show cooked? They maybe warmed up. Is what you would say.
Mania Night 1, nothing was at the level of that triple threat main event at Mania Night 1. But that Mania Night 1 was very bad too. So yeah. I don't think it's a high bar that this would be hitting.
Yeah. Just to go back to a comment, I want to hear your thoughts on this. EFellin28 says, if it's Money in the Bank, why not do Cena and Punk?
Because it's Punk is involved in like this whole other story at this point. It feels like you would just be plucking him out of this whole thing that they've just set up with Rollins and with Reigns being taken out with him. It just feels like we're talking in 4 weeks.
Yeah, probably too soon for that. Let's go to your turn.
We go to the Blind Avenger. He says, I thought the show really delivered in a surprising way. The crowd was noticeably into everything, and the buzz they brought into each match made for a great atmosphere. I thought Lyra and Becky really stole the show with the match quality and story they told. Since my name isn't just a gimmick, I rely on the announcers to get me immersed into each contest. While some of the sound bites in the video packages didn't help, I thought that the performers did a great job, while Cole and Wade added a lot with their commentary. I also liked how the finish put Lyra over and allowed the feud to continue regardless. Could we be looking at a last woman standing match next? My low light of the night was everything involving Pat McAfee. While I can't deny they had the crowd fully invested, it was hard to pretend that Pat was standing up for broadcasters everywhere, given his political affiliations. Having them heap so much praise on him after the match just rubbed me the wrong way, too. I get that's due to my own biases as a Canadian, though. All of the other matches were somewhat predictable, but entertaining nonetheless. I thought the main event over-delivered, but got a little ridiculous with all the RKOs towards the end. Still, it got me invested, and that's a major feat considering everyone knew Cena would be retaining. It was funny when they pointed out that Orton would have no problem cheating compared to Cody's refusal at WrestleMania, though. I'm interested to hear how it's addressed when he returns, because it just continues to make Rhodes sound like an idiot. Aside from that, everything else was fine. Looking forward to seeing how Jeff Cobb is integrated, given Jacob's confusion over the interference. Having Solo bringing him in makes me wonder if that guy is about to be overshadowed by another heavy of his own choosing, though. All right. Well, thanks. And he congratulates Way on his new arrival.
Thank you, Blind Avenger. Let's go lastly here to Muggin, who says, Backlash flew by. Jeff Cobb had a good debut that further pushes Jacob Fatu into babyface land after a damn fun opener. Becky Lyra had a bunch of urgency and desperation and got the right reactions. Gunther Pat somehow over-delivered, and Cena Orton had a great atmosphere with an overbooked chaotic second half. A solid night.
All right. Well, there you go. There were all of your thoughts and feedback on Backlash. What an interesting show.
So now I'm trying to grade your subtext with
no like I mean. I didn't have like too many like too much like negativity, but I'm not heaping overwhelming praise on this show either. Like it was a satisfying 2 hours and 45 minutes, whatever the length was. Like I didn't leave this unsatisfied. It was like it was a very good show. Like solid thumbs in the middle. I'm very Switzerland on
thumbs
this.
In the middle doesn't mean it was satisfying, right?
Yes, it does. It's
it means
it's
it was both satisfying and unsatisfying, somewhere in between. You know.
I'd say that I was I didn't enjoy the main event as much as you did, but like it was I'll put it this way. When I saw the length of the match at the end, it did not feel like 28 minutes to me. So I will say that. But it is, I can appreciate the fact that they are aware of like what is going to work with their audience and relying on this fact. But it is, it is amusing sometimes when we will hear the wise men of professional wrestling that will always state, and typically like a Paul Levesque, about, you know, it's not just about moves and doing them all over. It's about making them mean something. It's like, I'm watching this match. I'm like, no, this is like 1,000% just about, this is like 80 RKOs. It's 80 AAs and the crowd's going nuts. So it's like there is a compromise there that I think we should understand. We do all of this stuff because we know it will work, and it did here. So it was very much just heavy reliance on these big moves that the audience continued to buy in. Like, you could have done another dozen AAs and RKOs, and this crowd, that's what they were there for. They left satisfied.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even know how to really decipher. I don't remember the Levesque comment, so I don't really have much to add.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to say goodbye to everybody, but we will have Rewind to Raw coming at you Monday night, right after Raw, as we will see the follow-up to the big press conference that went down after Backlash. What is the state of R-Truth after an AA through a table? Did they continue the press conference afterwards? Did they bring out people to a broken table to have to take questions?
That I don't know.
Oh, that might have ended the press conference early. Mm-hmm. This is what they should have done after that Royal Rumble last year.
Well, how do you continue after seeing an AA through a table?
It's a pretty chaotic conference scene. You got to get medics in there, check them. Maybe they did a stretcher angle as well. So there you have it. We'll be back Monday night. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Again, check us out, postwrestlingcafe.com, where you can check out all of what is going on in the world of post-wrestling. Hey, shout out to our unofficial marketer there, at Backlash tonight, and shirt, no less. I'm not sure who this gentleman was, but man, repping us loud and proud right there in the front row.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Thank you, whoever you were, for coming in and repping the post-wrestling hat and also shirt, if I can.
Yeah. Bring it spotted up the hat. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then later the guy took his jacket off. I'm like, oh man, this guy went all in. This guy was not joking around. Okay. This guy is with us, man.
Chomp-tees.com/postwrestling.
The MVP of the show. I might give the show a thumbs up now. All right, there. Right above the American vodka.
That's it, yes.
All right. Great integration. Great activation. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it for us. Good night, everybody.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at rinse.com. That's RINSE.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tonton products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.